This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, before we go back to the phone lines, we don't often take advantage of the fact that you are an economist and that you get to see this whole thing through a trained eye that most of us don't get to see. You see a picture completely different than the one we see. We just can't or don't want to accept that these things are happening. We elect people in this representative government who are supposed to be looking out for the best interests of the American people. We can't petition the government ourselves, Sandy. I can't say, hey, I want to go to Congress and tell the Congress people, hey, man, you got to stop doing what's in the best interest of lobbyists and business and do what's in the best interest of we, the American people. That's why we send you there.
Well, I mean, I just think that the people tend to hear what they want to hear. And then
the government,
the politicians we elect only want to talk about the things that are easy to talk about. So, for instance, CJ's call, he's wanting to adopt the premise that there's $2.7 trillion of revenue to be earned from tariffs, as if that's all good news, money that's going to pour into the coffers. And it's going to be painless. Well, number one, it's not going to be painless. It's going to be paid by the American people. And number two, he then says that it's really a negotiating posture. Well, if it's a negotiating posture, then we're not going to get the $2.7 trillion. So what we need in Washington is reality. We need people to talk in real sense terms about what it is that needs to happen, what it is that's going to happen. And maybe we need to put the horse before the cart. When we talk about, for instance, reducing taxes, we need to first make sure that we can afford to reduce taxes instead of reducing taxes and then figuring out how we can afford to do it.
You know, Sandy, you basically are saying that because I believe this can be fixed. To think that our government can't balance itself, to think that our government is not in a position to do what's right and what's in the interest of the people who send them there, I'm not accepting that because, you know, those people wouldn't be there, Sandy, if we didn't send them there.
Well, I'm not sure there's logic in that. They won't be there unless we send them there. But the reason we send them there and how we choose to send them there needs to get modified so that we need to hold their feet to the fire after we send them there. And I think what's happened is that, and one of the callers last week pointed out that our congressional representatives now represent in the neighborhood of 780,000 right. people rather than a much smaller number. So, when one person represents 780,000 people, that's much like what a U.S. senator used to represent in when our states were smaller. If you decided that the average state in the country had 2 million people. Well, each senator represented a million of them, maybe, maybe the 2 million. But in any case, it's become very expensive to get elected. And that expense for getting elected has prompted our politicians to listen to the people who facilitate their reelection. And unfortunately, that isn't apparently, in their mind, the average Joe. It's the people who fund their elections. It's the special interests. It's the private. It's the political action funds that have lots of money. So the political action funds all represent the gun lobby or the major defense contractor in their state, or some other entity that they then listen to and get persuaded that whatever they're hearing is very important to the public.
But Sandy, the average Joe elects them.
Well, the average Joe, we need to figure out, and like I said before, I'm afraid that the pathway to getting this action is to have a charismatic leader come on the scene who makes this issue number one, and that is to get the American public to think about what it is that they need and want and make sure that it's the needs of the American public that get reflected in the legislation. You know, we've had, I think this last period, we had 72 bills passed through Congress, which is a remarkably small number. But can anybody in the public list more than about two of them? No, because there's no public discussion of them, because they all relate to things that are related really to special interests.
Sandy, before we go to the phone lines, the charismatic leader is a long shot. How often do charismatic leaders come around to change the directives or the direction or turn around a ship like the American government?
Well, unfortunately, we just elected a charismatic leader, someone who runs on personality and not on policy. I don't think it's the right one for sure in my mind, but it's a demonstration that there is the possibility that, my hope is that the next charismatic leader to come on the scene will be one who is rightly motivated to impact the public's view in the ways that it needs to be impacted.
Speaking of charismatic people, hey, Mike from Kenosha. Hey, good morning to you, Mike. Your thoughts?
Hey, I'll take it. Thanks. appreciate it very much. Sandy, great conversation, and also Jim's call at the top of the hour was awesome right before the break. But, you know, Sandy, you being an economist, one of the things that America seems to turn a blind eye to often, and that is history. And I suggest maybe, you know, using as many analogies to the tying today with the Gilded Age, for example, just an afterthought to the conversation you were having before. We are repeating history. There's no question about it. And I think if we're all a little bit more cognizant of that, it wouldn't be as frustrating to we the people. But there's no doubt for the last 40 years plus, our Republican infrastructure, our Democratic infrastructure has been neglected, just like, you know, our pipes and water systems. And when you put in people like Newt Gingrich and others that claim that the government is the problem and they need to drown the government in the bathtub and get it so small, you know, when we put the wrong people in, this thing called trickle down goes from a theory and just talking points, talking memos, to reality. And I still don't hear enough condemnation. And it's the trickle-down. Our economy is just rocking. It's the envy of the world. The problem is the pie is not being divided anywhere near equitable. And unless we start taking the messaging, we don't have a progressive conversations don't happen, even on mainstream, you know, MSNBC, CNBC. You have a few here and there, but no. Meanwhile, the right-wing machine is vast. There's several networks that are dedicated to their messaging, and where we are today, guys, is it shows what can happen when there's no pushback and you allow a thing like trickle down and another thing like job creators to become, common language and revered and not analyzed. You're talking about before,
Mike. One of the things you mentioned was the Gilded Age, which I was talking to Earl before the show started about the difference between how government reacted to the Gilded Age and how it is now. The Gilded Age is that time period, the turn of the last century, when we had the Carnegies and the people who were developing the railroads, and we had John D. Rockefeller, who was the richest man in the world. And what did the government do then? But under Teddy Roosevelt and progressives, they stood up to them. They broke up Standard Oil. They took on the railroad industry and regulated it. They reacted the way the economy and the average American needed them to react to the very wealthy. What do we have today? We've got the richest man in the world sitting in our government, essentially, at the right hand of the president, calling the shots. We have the people who are our version today of Carnegie and Rockefeller running the show publicly, taking on our administrative processes and getting rid of them because they're inconvenient. And so, you know, we have a problem, because back then we had a government that was willing to stand up to the very wealthy and to defeat essentially an oligarchy, which was the Gilded Age. And today we have a government which is embracing them and incorporating them in our government. And I think that's a dangerous difference.
I couldn't agree more. And keep in mind, as long as there's profiteering in war and people in groups, donors, making hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars, we'll always have a war. And you know, Teddy Roosevelt was one of these guys that looked around the corner and could anticipate, you know, and had the courage to take on, again, the barons of the day. But there's no doubt, you know, when a last thing, when we can have a George H.W. Bush retire as, get defeated, and then he is elected chairman of the Carlyle Group, which is an investment group that invests in nothing but military-industrial complex corporations. That kind of says it all, guys. We have a big problem. We have a big, big problem.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, the conversation is poignant and certainly worthy of continuing. There are other things we want to talk about. We've got phone line people on the phone lines who want to continue this conversation. So we'll stay with it. 855-752-4842. You know, Sandy Williams is here. And again, we don't often take advantage of him being this top-notch economist. But I thought today, especially the beginning of the year and where we are, that we really take a chance to really drill down with Sandy. So 855-752-4842. Guys, hang on. We're coming right to you. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the singing. We will rock you. We will rock you. Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street, gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, a big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. We will.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy. Sandy, the music.
Football. This is all stuff that they either play at football games or relates to football. And it's been football all day, all week, and will continue to be for a while. And it's been great stuff.
You know, Sandy, speaking of great stuff, the conversation is really great. And we've got the phone lines. Let's go to the phone lines. Mary from Tulsa. Mary, you're calling about politics. Go ahead.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy, and thanks for this rather hair-raising discussion. The facts or projections you're presenting us are pretty concerning financially, especially to hardworking folks of the middle class. So it was a generation that preceded us who had lived experience with the devastation during the Depression years. In your opinion, what's the potential that this is the direction we're headed in? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, as always, Mayor, for a great question.
Well, you know, we pray that there's nothing like the Depression on the horizon, but I do fear that there might be something like the stagflation, which we suffered through in the late 70s and early 80s, in which we had a recessionary economy coupled with inflation. And the horror of that is that the inflation makes it impossible for the government to fuel the economy with more money and to bring us out of recession, and we're left with a quagmire. And the things that are being talked about now in the incoming administration are very inflationary. Okay, the imposition of tariffs across the board, the reduction in taxes without a reductions in expenditures that are offsetting to them, the throttling of the Federal Reserve's capacity to raise interest to try and defeat inflation. There's just a whole variety of things that Donald Trump has talked about and the Republican Party has talked about, which unfortunately will be inflationary and could well cause an inflation-induced recession, which creates stagflation. And to me, that's really the risk that we face, that we need to be concerned about, is an inflation, is a recession which is induced by inflation, and which it becomes very hard to get out of. And it's even doubly hard to get out of because the formula normally for getting out of a recession is bigger deficit expenditures by the government. But we've already been stressing that unnecessarily because of the tax reductions we had, which were put into place at a time when we already had a strong economy. So, you know, we've got a government now that's in which the conservatives, who you would normally rely upon for fiscal constraint, give lip service to it, but they don't walk the walk. And in fact, they're walking backwards in that regard.
All right, let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. First off, I am a proud Franklin Delano Roosevelt Democrat, and I hope everybody starts repeating that because we are basically back in the era of the 30s. Also, Sandy, I want to ask you a favor. Can you please Google, and maybe all the listeners as well. I know Earl gets tired of me talking about money and politics and lobbyists and politics, but I think it's very, very important that all listeners are able to amplify that message to everybody, so maybe something actually can be a call to action. But my request is, can you go to Google and just put in Jude Waninsky Two Santa Claus theories?
That's a request for Sandy?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
apparently, yeah.
Okay. So, Tom, what do you
it's
want?
This is an essay, essentially, that discusses some of what we've been discussing. But, yeah.
Go ahead, Tom.
So it was his idea. Jude Waninsky was working for Ronald Reagan, and it was his idea to make it, because the Democrats always gave good programs like Social Security and Medicare and things like this, that they were kind of the Santa Claus of policy. And Republicans wanted to be, they didn't want to be, or they weren't the Santa Claus, and that's why they were out of power for so long. And so what they did is they became the tax cut Santa Claus. So when they get in power, they do tax cuts. And then when the Democrats get in power, there's no money to do any programs. So therefore, it's the two Santa Claus theory. I don't even know if I'm explaining it exactly correctly, but please, everybody, not just Sandy, but everybody, I just like to get Sandy's opinion on it. Two Santa Claus theory, Common Dreams by Tom Hartman.
All right, Tom, thank you for the call.
Well, obviously, it's a political strategy, but it's one also that's very, very expedient for those who have money, and it's very appealing to those. So it's not just politics, it's greed, it's expedience. But, you know, the Republicans have found it very attractive to reduce taxes in any circumstance and to throw a bone to the middle class. So the middle class, yeah, they get tax reductions, but a tax reduction of $500 to Tom, Dick, and Mary doesn't solve the problem they have. It is apparently or seems like free money, and oh boy, but it's just a bone. And meanwhile, the people who pay lots of taxes because they have lots of money get very big benefits out of this, and they start strangling federal government programs, which actually are there to help the middle class.
All right, 855-752-4842. Guys, hang on. It's Friday. It means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you will get you on the other side.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I'm getting hungry. It's time to eat. Let the competition feed this beast. Line them up, knock them down. Built from nothing, all the way up, breaking this ground. Whoa.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us that same number. You know, it's Friday. It means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, the music.
Well, it's about football, and that one is particularly poignant. It's all about how they're growing them bigger, faster, stronger, which is absolutely true. You know, the fact, it's kind of horrific. Some of the injuries you see on the field, I think, are the result of the fact that these guys are flying around at speeds and with weight and strength that was never before.
You know, Sandy, you and I talked about a lot of different subjects that we wanted to cover this morning, and we haven't moved off of this one. And because, you know, the more you delve into this and the more the callers call and ask it, the more I realize that, you know, the American people just have to know what's going on. We don't know what's going on, for heaven's sakes, man. And so people are getting away with these things because we're too busy, Sandy. We've got our own lives to lead. And so,
well, and I also I think the lack of fiscal responsibility in Washington is a symptom of almost all of the other problems. It's a symptom of the fact that the representatives are responding to the interests of special interests, and they're taking the easy path of no resistance whenever they can. So they aren't having their feet held to the fire, and as a result, they aren't responsible fiscally, and they aren't responsive to the needs of the middle class. They're responsive to the people who are funding their re-elections, who are the people who have special interest group PACs, political action committees, who carry these large bundles of money on behalf of people with an interest in government, but it's not an interest in government that's the public interest in government. It's the interest in government that's reflective of the special interests they represent.
So before we go back to the phone lines, we just had an election. Billions of dollars spent. Billions of dollars spent. Almost half the American people don't participate because they don't see any of those things changing the trajectory of their lives. And then people say to them, you know, and ridicule them because they don't see a correlation between who's ever elected and their lives. And then we have these conversations with you. The depth of the conversation kind of points out that, hey, you know, maybe what they're saying is true.
Well, I think what's true is that the government is not acting responsibly or responsively and needs to get fixed, but it's not going to get fixed by the president-elect who promises to make things different, but already the way he's making it different is to bring the special interests into the foreground where we can see them and let them run the government in full view. So we've got Elon Musk calling the shots, making sure that electric vehicles get the rights that they should have, that makes sure that cryptocurrency is given the opportunity for the owners of cryptocurrency to make a lot of money. I mean, we're just watching special interests have their way with us in public. And I fear that it might follow the same formula that Donald Trump has followed, which is if you do it openly and notoriously, the people of America aren't necessarily offended by it. And I think we have to get back to something much more like the Gilded Age, where the American public doesn't necessarily make it impossible for the wealthy to get very wealthy. But we shouldn't exalt people simply because they're wealthy. We should not exalt people and give them influence and power simply because they have lots of money. And right now, people who make lots of money have celebrity status in our lives. Look at our athletes. Look at our celebrities, performers.
Entertainers, right.
Entertainers. And the same is true now with the people who make enormous sums of money. So we have celebrity status for Jeffrey Bezos, for Mark Zuckerberg, for Elon Musk, and for a growing list of extremely, unimaginably wealthy people.
All right, let's go to Mark from Prairie du Sac. Good morning to you, Mark. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Yeah, you just mentioned the ultra rich there. I mean, those were warnings that Madison at least made. I don't know if it was a constitutional note in the Constitutional Convention, but in the Federalist Papers, of the dangers of aristocracy, oligarchy, leading to despotism. And it's ironic that, and this is kind of switching back to what I was going to say originally, that Vivek Ramaswamy was making a comment about the illiteracy in this country and people, that people aren't reading up to grade level. And part of it is, I think, that not so much people can't read, but I mean that they're not reading, they're not literate in terms of economics or politics, not following politics the way they were. I mean, the division in politics and the division in media being so divided, or sort of divided, because it's all pretty much corporate these days. But going back to the days of the founders, I mean, there was the Democratic Republicans and the Federalists, and that the media there back then was very partisan. I mean, that you had your Federalist newspapers and your Democratic Republican newspapers, and more or less going to toe-to-toe with one another with the different political points of view, the different political theories. But I think people back then, I think literacy rates were actually higher back in the days of the Revolution than they are today. I mean, that for all the progress we've made scientifically and in that people actually actively read, the news of the day, and I don't know that they're doing it today. They get spoon-fed stuff from the media, and they turn the media sources they want to believe in, and to the detriment of our democracy. I mean,
Mark, Sandy, you want to respond? Thank you very much for calling, Mark.
I think Mark puts his finger on obviously what is a basic problem, which is how do we get information, and who is it that, who of us are seeking out information? Where do we go? What are our sources for information today? And those the changes that have come to the way we obtain information has caused, I think, number one, the number of people who are interested in getting information to decline, because the information sources that we have tend to be so biased that either you are one of the sheep who wants to follow that shepherd, or you're repulsed by it and want to get out of the game altogether. And I think we have an increasing number of people in this country who have decided that the discordance of our politics, the extreme partisanship, is something they simply want to avoid altogether. And I think that our country has now divided into like three sectors: those who are partisanly stiffly right, those who are partisanly stiffly left, and those who want nothing of any of it and simply might show up at the polls and decide how they're going to vote. And it's that middle group that seems to have quite a bit of influence today in terms of deciding who gets elected. But I'm not sure that it's a group that has spent a lot of their time figuring out the information they need to figure out who they should vote for.
All right, let's go to Cassandra from Middleton. Good morning to you, Cassandra. You say what?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. A happy new year to both of you.
You as well. What's your thoughts on this discussion? I think it's a fascinating discussion.
Well, you know what? Mark just raised a point that I wanted to speak to you as an educator. It wasn't what I originally was going to talk about, but here is something that I would like Mark to consider and others, and that is about our current educational system compared to those overseas, such as India, China, Japan, the students who are doing exceptionally well compared to our U.S. students. All of those countries, they all have an official language. If you're in China, you must learn Mandarin. If you're in Japan, you must speak Japanese. And in our American system, we cater to students from different ethnicities and who also bring with them different languages. Now, I am not saying that we should not teach those children, but we are taking on an additional burden that many of these countries that are touted as the cream of the crop, their educational system, they don't carry that burden. And that's just a point that I really wanted to put out there. I don't know if you all are aware of this, but we have teachers in our elementary schools who are paying out of pocket for translation software so they can communicate with students who are coming in because they don't speak the language. And what is really sad, I read an article about a Hispanic student who was serving as a translator for some of the other Latin American students coming in. So we have a burden that these other countries do not have.
Cassandra, let me just interrupt you for a minute. It's a burden we've always had. We had German speakers, we had Polish speakers, we have Italian speakers. We've always been a country that has had has imported not just people from foreign lands, but people with foreign tongues. And we're in the process of assimilating them. So I don't know quite what you're speaking to in terms of the capacity of our people to be responsive to the learning that's necessary to be proper citizens and to exercise their vote knowingly. But I think what you're describing, first of all, is anecdotal, but two, you are describing something which has been an ongoing phenomena in our country, which is we've taken in an influx of people. We took in many Chinese during the period of the building of the railroads, and we've taken in an influx of foreign tongues forever. So, yes, it's a problem. But it's a problem we've dealt with, and it's probably a problem that has leavened our culture.
I'd like to respond to that. That is true. We have taken, we do have a history of educating people from other countries, but there was no law requiring us to do it. It was in the 1990s when the courts stated that you can, that you have to educate students who are from a different country. But before then, it wasn't required.
I think that's just plain wrong, Cassandra. I think the Milwaukee Public School District has always educated the people of foreign tongues who came into it. And I think that the school districts always permitted students to attend school if they lived in the school district. And they were dealt with, maybe they were taught in English. I presume they were, but they made it through. You know, the fact is that there was a time in the Milwaukee school public school system where we had German-speaking schools. So I don't know. I don't quite understand the point you're making, but it sounds like it's a point designed to suggest that it's the immigrants from the Spanish-speaking countries that have created problems in the country. And I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think the problems are necessarily, other than the numbers. We, you know, we do have a very substantial number of people for whom Spanish was their original language who have immigrated. I think we also find that by the time they get to the second generation, they all speak English.
No, Sandy, I am not trying to put the blame on Hispanic-speaking students. What I'm saying is that our standards for how we educate children in the United States has changed, but that is a fact.
All right, Cassandra, thank you very much for the call. Guys, hang on, 855-752-4842. Sandy Williams and I will continue. You're tuned into The Earl Ingram Show. Rise up and break the chain, no pain, no gain. No pain, no gain, rise up and break the chain, no pain, no gain, rise up and break the chain, no pain, no gain, rise up and break the chain, no pain, no gain, rise up and break the chain.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, Sandy, that's basketball, right?
No, this is jump around. This is
That's right, the Badgers. Yeah,
this is the Badgers jump around. This is the very best thing that happens at any football game, any place.
Yeah, I've been to Madison. I don't know why I would say it was. Yeah, that's exactly it. 855-752-4842. You know, Sandy, we've been at, it's Friday. It means Friday's my call. Sandy, we've been at and on this topic for the duration of the show. And I can say to you that really important conversations that I wish more Americans could hear and could understand, because, you know, maybe if they understood, they wouldn't feel as hopeless as so many Americans feel. Even after having just participated in an election, feeling like now there's some who think that we've got to wait another 4 years before anything changes, right? There are people who actually believe that. And so, you know, it's tough. Let's go to Bill from O'Connor. All right, go ahead, Bill. Good morning.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to you and Sandy. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yep.
I'd like to offer this in 2025. Let's use report cards, and the report cards are going to be this: honesty, diplomacy, leadership, integrity, and humanitarianism. And let's rate all our leaders against that. I've often thought of starting a group called the Keepers of the Constitution and having those report cards. If we did it electronically and rated them, I guarantee you we'd have an impact on the upcoming year. Your thoughts, guys. I'll hang up.
right, Bill, thank you very much for the call. Sandy?
Well, I do think it would be interesting to harness the power of the internet and the capacity for groupthink for the public, the general public out there, to weigh in on things that are happening in a very direct way. I was involved once in our law firm in setting up a system where the audience could all vote with a little clicker on a bunch of issues, and it resulted in a very interesting dynamic process for dialogue without speech. And I think the public could do the same. I think Bill might have hit on something that possibly someone with a great deal of initiative might be able to get going, because it would be simple. You know, it would be very simple to set up an app for the American public to carry around on their phones and to react to things that are going on in a real-time way, in a much more systematic and accurate fashion than polling, right? Polls taken by various biased entities who might have a stake in the outcome of the poll, and therefore it might be skewed. We could have real-time public reactions, and maybe that's a way to get money out of politics. Maybe that is a way to get Tom, Dick, and Mary. I think, Bill, you're not a 19-year-old innovator, but you might have come up with a real good idea.
You know, Sandy, Mike from Kenosha has a plan called the Truth Chamber. I got to let you take a look at it. He presented that to me months ago as something that we could possibly incorporate, you know, on our show. But there are people who have thoughts and ideas. Look, the American people have to be shocked into understanding what's going on in our country, Sandy. You know, we're taught to fear what's happening at the border and all these other places and all of those things. And really, the conversation that we had this 2 hours really is at the root of what's really wrong in the country, not the people at the border.
No, and actually, I think, Bill, I'm kind of stirred up by what Bill just suggested, because it would be such an easy thing to implement, and somebody could actually make money out of it. You know, you could develop an app that could go on everyone's phone that could permit people to react real time to real issues, and then could have a real, honest, and accurate reflection of the public view, so long as this app was carried by, you know, 150 million people. I mean, it's altogether possible for many, many people to participate in that fashion. And maybe it's what we need. You know, we only vote every 2 or 4 years, but we could maybe vote every day. We could demonstrate our interest and reflect what we really think.
Sandy, I'm telling you, that is something that Mike from Kenosha has kind of put together. I'm going to bring Mike on with us and let Mike explain his Truth Chamber.
Well, but we need someone who wants to implement this into an actual business model that creates an app that gets it going. But I think it's a stroke of genius, actually. I think it's something that could have a real impact.
Well, you know, Sandy, man, you know, we're out of time. And, you know, man, it's taking advantage of your vast knowledge in so many different things. You know, the fact that you are a renowned economist is one of those things that we don't.
Well, I'm not. I think renowned is an adjective that's unnecessary.
Sandy,
there. But
well,
any,
Sandy,
in any case, yeah,
Sandy,
I'm willing to talk about it.
Yeah, you are an average economist that maybe we shouldn't pay too much attention to. But I'm only joking. But anyway, it is great to have your knowledge and get that knowledge shared with our listening audience. I am grateful all the time for having you on, man. Today, you kind of, you know, you know, made things a lot clearer for a lot of people.
And here we go. This is
all right.
This is
jump
this
around.
This is more jump around. I think everyone right now needs to stand up and jump around. That's what they do at the end of the third quarter at Camp Randall.
Only if you're capable of standing up and jumping around.
Yeah, all right.
We got to get out of here. Sandy, I'll see you next Tuesday. Thank everybody who made the show. Go, Kevin. Thank you for a great week. Thank you to the listening audience. Up next, Greg Bach, Jane Madnair, Madnair on air. Have a great weekend. See you later.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.